This is the Mile High Five podcast with Carl Jensen and Doug Cunnington. We have authentic conversations about the journey to Phi, health, happiness, and some very odd tangents. We interview Phi experts, side hustlers, people on their way to Phi, and those who have reached the other side. Join us every week, and if you want the show notes and links and all that other stuff, head over to milehighfi.com.
Hello, world. Welcome to the Mile High Fi podcast. I am Carl Jensen with my co-host.
I'm Doug Cunnington.
Doug, what's happening? We haven't recorded in a long time.
Yeah, we were on our own little adventures, and then we are back together, and we have a pretty fun episode today. We got a few questions.
Yeah, today we're answering an email. This is like a mini case study, and then I asked our Facebook group for ideas, too. Excuse me. And they had a couple. Well, I can't talk either today, Doug. Doug has a cold, and apparently I caught Doug's cold in like the past 10 seconds. Anyway, we have a few questions from Rich. That's our good buddy from GhostBed. We're going to talk about diet and food. Another one is what we've learned from other Phi folks, because we've talked to a lot of people. We're always at conferences and talking to people in the space. The last one is about who would win a cage match between Doug and I. Oh, and actually, we have one about retaining walls. So we have a little bit of everything. And if you stick around for the sound check, there is some fart humor that's worth staying around for. And you're far from us, so you can just enjoy the story and not have to deal with any of the other effects.
So one thing, if you want to have your question featured, be sure to check out our Facebook group, and we'll link up to that so you can get to it really easy. There's always a lot of conversation in there. I think, Carl, you're kind of spearheading that portion of it. And you can always shoot us an email, and those email addresses are in the show notes. So very easy to get in here. I'm going to read a tiny summary. So basically the case study is from a listener, Frank. He is 28 and has a stressful yet well-paying job. And he broke it down pretty well. And I think I'll let Carl dive into some of the details. But at the end of the day, he's in a great position, but he's at a crossroads.
Yeah, I would say the key question we're going to try to answer here is if Frank should stay at his current job, which he doesn't like so much, or move on to something else that he's been contemplating for a while. So the summary of Frank's situation, he's at a bit of a crossroads. He's seeking advice on whether he's on the right path to achieving financial independence through a more enjoyable and less stressful career, but one that might also pay a little bit less. He's reflecting on the long-term viability of his plans and the immediate need for a more balanced life. Frank apparently he's followed my stuff for a while. He's a dedicated listener of the podcast. Thank you so much, Frank. He's also been following the FIRE movement for a long time. So he reached out to share his journey and seek advice, and potentially about Coast FIRE, which is very popular, and his future exit for the corporate world. Frank is 28. He's found inspiration from Tim Ferriss and the Mr. Money Mustache blog during college. He currently works as a PLC programmer for an automation company in Michigan. He's primarily handling projects for an auto manufacturer. Despite enjoying some aspects of his job, Frank is disillusioned with the corporate environment, which he finds toxic and overly demanding, including a lengthy commute at times. His professional background includes being a mechanical engineer from a state school and a stint as a Navy officer that was cut short by a medical discharge during COVID. Post-Navy, Frank struggled to find work. He returned to construction for a while with a mentor from his past, which he enjoys. His father is a longtime auto industry employee and helped him secure his current programming position. Although he's grown competent in his role, the job's stress has exacerbated his mental health challenges, though he has been working on managing stress better. Frank has also been training to become a licensed residential builder and envisions himself starting his own LLC, aspiring to take over his mentor's business eventually. Financially, Frank is considering his savings and investment strategy carefully. We'll go over some of his numbers real quick and then get into it. He has $76,000 in his TSP.
And the TSP is what?
That is a thrift savings plan. So that is very similar to 401k. It's index funds, very low fee, and it's really good. The thrift savings plan is a great choice if you are working for the federal government. He has $32,000 in his current 401k. He has an IRA of $11,000. That's a traditional IRA. He has $50,000 in his Roth IRA. I think this next one is pretty important to his story. He has $155,000 in his Vanguard brokerage. He has $45,000 in cash, and that's a nice buffer. So that's going to come into play when we talk about him. He plans to continue investing, focusing on his brokerage for greater flexibility, and intends to tackle his fiance's student debt once married. So he isn't married yet, and he has no kids, which I think is important as well. His annual expenditures, including a new mortgage, are about $60,000 a year. He plans to offset by potentially earning $50,000 to $60,000 a year in construction if he moves to this new job. Frank has recently limited his work hours to a 40-hour week, avoiding the industry norm of long weekend-consuming schedules to allow time for construction work and to explore other personal interests. He's motivated by a desire for a more flexible, fulfilling life, prioritizing health, quality time with loved ones, and personal interests over material gains. Before Doug and I get into it, I want to tell the audience that Doug and I are going to give Frank our thoughts, but I think your thoughts are just as important, and y'all might see some stuff that we're completely blind to. If you do have these thoughts, send us an email. What's our email? Doug@milehighfi.com and Carl at milehighfi. Okay.
You got it.
Yeah, I can never remember our email, or go to our Facebook group, which we'll link to, but real quick, that's facebook.com/groups/milehighfi. So if you have any feedback for Frank, leave it there or send us an email and we will make sure he gets it. Doug, do you have any initial thoughts on Frank's situation?
Yeah, just looking at the sort of balance sheet here and his various accounts, I think he's doing really good for being 28 years old. That's well far ahead of where I was. Probably until I was, 36 or something. So I think he's in a great spot just overall. How about you?
Oh, yeah. Frank is killing it. Frank is doing super awesome. And his fiance has some debt. I think she had about $50,000 and she's a teacher. So she doesn't have a great income. But yeah, to have that level of savings, I mean, they're not even 30 and they have over $200,000. So he's done well so far. So, Doug, as I was reading this, I think the core question is, he makes $100,000 at his programming job, and if he steps down to this construction job, he'll make $60,000. So one of the core questions I think we need to tackle, probably the question, is if we think that's a good idea. But I think there might be some variables in there that at least Frank didn't mention in the email that I think we should bring up. But yeah, there's a real fundamental question here, and that is, should someone stay at a job they don't like or try to do something they'd enjoy more, even though they make less money? And it's so interesting. Like, is there a cutoff? Like, if he hated his job, but his job's paying him like 10x what the other thing could be, I think you could make a case for staying there. Just do it for another year. Like, as long as it's not going to kill you, put up with it for a little bit, save all that like hell, and then you could do whatever you want after that.
Right.
But this, I don't think it's as cut and dry, because it's a $40,000 difference, which is still pretty significant, but he could still get by if he goes to this other job, and he'll be a lot happier. He'll put his FI timeline out a little bit longer, but he could still do it.
Mm-hmm. Well, one thing to consider on the option to stick at the job, right? So some people, not me, maybe not you, but some people, they have a really high work ethic and they have to do a good job. So if they get an assignment, like, they're going to do the absolute best that they can do, sacrificing other stuff, health, family life, stress, time, whatever, fitness. There's so many different areas you could pull from. I didn't have that problem. So, and I do identify it as a problem. And if he can do what he said and like, hey, I'm going to work 40 hours a week. I'm not going to do weekends. I'm not going to let them overstep their bounds. I'm going to have a clear boundary. And he sticks to it. I think he might be okay. You can also take it a step further. This is in our book, by the way, in the Being Lazy at Work section. So you can do kind of a bad job, maybe say like 25% of your work for a portion of the year. And it's pretty hard to fire somebody. He's a veteran. He has, sounds like a pretty good work history. at the company. So he could actually do a bad job and they would probably put him on some sort of performance improvement plan before firing him, most likely. And you can't do it forever, but you could do it for longer than you think. And yeah, and the other employees, right? Again, you have to have thick skin. The other employees are like, you know, Frank's not pulling his weight. Why isn't he getting this stuff done? Like you have to accept the fact that you're going to look like a lazy piece of shit. But you could do it and like do whatever you want with your free time and go on with your life. At the job, again, it looks horrible. Your bosses are going to be like, what's going on? They'll think you have something going on at home or whatever, right? And they'll potentially pull some work away from you too. And again, it's not the greatest scenario if you're like, I want to climb the corporate ladder. But he doesn't. He's like, I want to get the fuck out of this job. And we're looking at this specific case study, but with Elizabeth quitting her job recently, I was perplexed why she was still working so hard when she knew she was going to quit. She had already put in her notice, and it just didn't make sense to me that she still let the company have so much power over her. It doesn't make sense to me. It does not make sense. You don't have to do a bad job like I outlined, but at least you could say, I have this firm line in the sand and I'm only going to do this stuff. I'm not going to do above and beyond. Like at the point that you put in your notice, it's like, you don't even care, right? I mean, you shouldn't. So anyway, one option, if he wants to stay at the job, is to just do way less. And if he has the right attitude, which is a negative attitude, then he could just do a bad. What do you think of this? Wouldn't you hate working with me?
Yeah, I don't think I like that plan, Doug. I like having my backup plans available. So I would, my initial piece of advice for him is going to be a little bit different, but I think.
No, that's not advice, by the way, but some people are like, you guys always paint the corporate gigs bad. If he wants to stay at the corporate gig and get the benefits and the pay, he doesn't have to work as hard as he was.
Okay.
You can phone it in.
Yeah, so that is one option. And lots of people, I don't think they're, like you're talking about, intentionally phoning it in. I worked with some pretty shitty people who I think were doing maybe the best they can. They thought they were putting effort into it, but they just weren't that great. Maybe there's some middle ground in there somewhere. I don't know what kind of people Frank works for. Maybe he works for some, if he works for a bunch of like superstar programmers, this might not be a viable option because if he's the lowest one on the programming totem pole, so to say. But yeah, interesting. I wonder if there's any middle ground here. So he said he's had some mental health struggles. Could he use that to maybe negotiate a little bit different of a situation with his job? So could he either negotiate a sabbatical where he already has this mentor? He could just go on the sabbatical and then work for this mentor for 3 months and figure out if that's what he really wants to do, because there might be some stuff he's not seeing. Or potentially negotiate his work situation like to a part-time situation. I think many more companies are agreeable to that than you'd think. Like, that's what I did at the end of my career, and I never thought they would agree to it. And then they did. Now, that might change his relationship with work. For example, he might have to go from a W-2 employee to a contractor. He might lose his health insurance. But when you go to a contractor, a lot of times they'll pay you more because they're not paying all that health insurance and they're not giving you benefits. So he might even have an opportunity to work less, maybe 3 days a week, but still make the same or more. Like I know they doubled my pay when I went to become a contractor. And I was kind of surprised. They just volunteered that. And they're like, oh, yeah, we don't have to pay all this other stuff for you. And there is one bad part. I think you have to pay like both sides of FICA or something like that. Someone will know what I'm talking about and comment. But I wonder if there's any middle ground for Frank like that where he could, where it doesn't have to be an all or nothing thing where he quits and just goes to this construction. Or maybe the other middle ground is he leaves the door open to go back. He quits, but leaves on a good foot instead of the one you talked about, Doug. So
right.
If construction doesn't work out for him in like 6 months, he can go back. He still has his skills. And I'm sure what he does is probably in demand because tech people are in demand. He already has experience. He also mentioned in the email that they're about to open another factory. And to be clear, he works in a factory, not at headquarters. So he said he is going to be in demand. So it sounds like he's in a position of power, mm-hmm. and I think he should leverage that and maybe even take a chance with it, maybe ask for a little bit more than he thinks he could and maybe land on some middle ground there to effectively or more comfortably transition.
That's something he'll have to reflect on and think of, you know, outside the box and unusual agreements and stuff like that. But I think overall, like, staying at the gig is probably not a great idea. I mean, it sounds like too stressful. And when new plants open up, like, that doesn't mean it's less stressful, right? It's even worse, right? There's more stuff to go wrong.
Yeah.
So, you know, looking at the big picture, it seems like even a compromise is only a Band-Aid. It might help him earn a little bit more, but in the long run, it seems like he might need to move from the job. In my scenario, you know, just to be clear, again, don't recommend that unless you're just like, I hate this company and I never want to work with any of these people again. Because yeah, they're probably not going to want to work with you.
Yep. Okay. I have a couple more thoughts for Frank and then we'll wrap this part up. My first one is, if he does do this, being a contractor is a lot different than being an employee. You don't have a guaranteed stream of money. You have to deal with people. You have to get work. Some people are going to be difficult. He's going to have to get health insurance. He might have to do some marketing. He might have to acquire tools, stuff like that. So there's a lot more overhead around his job. I know he enjoys the core work of construction, but there's a lot of other stuff wrapped around that. And a lot of, from me dealing with construction people, a lot of those people, even the best ones who do the great work, often don't have the people skills. So Frank might have to struggle with this stuff, but he also could be good at that because of where he's coming from. And this is a really good time. And I'll back up a second, Doug. I agree with you. I think he should take this chance and leave. And it's the perfect time. He has no kids. He's not married. He has a fiance, but he's not married. And he's got $155,000 in post-tax, and he spends $60,000 a year. So he has almost 3 years that he could live on to try out this experiment. And if it doesn't work, he could probably just go back. So this is a perfect time in his life to take a chance. The other thing I thought of is he mentioned $60,000 a year. And I'm like, man, if he works for that cheap, I actually thought about sending him a note saying, like, come out to Colorado. I'll pay you a lot better than that, because I've hired some crappy people who want like 50 to 75 an hour out here. I think he could probably make more money than that, especially if he eventually hires someone to work with him. He's the main guy, but he hires someone. So I think he might be able to do a lot better than that eventually. But yeah, like you, Doug, my final thought is he should err on the side of leaving his job.
Do we know if that $60,000 a year is working with his friend who has a company already?
Ooh, that is a good question. I'm not sure about that. I'm going to take a quick look through his email real quick.
And I'll talk through it as you're looking up. Okay. So the point being, of course, yeah, like the person that owns the company might be charging whatever, $75, $125 per hour, but the person that actually shows up might be getting like half or a third of that.
Sure.
And this is another point. Basically, you got to run a business, right? So even if he likes the trade, he does need to understand, like, okay, I need to run this like a business and be very aware of that whole side of it. There's plenty of places you can get mentorship. He already has a friend that can sort of help him out. But like running a business is a little bit different than doing the trade. And we probably see this all the time. Like, you have to manage your cash flow. You have to understand a lot of little pieces that are completely unrelated to construction, building houses, etc. And he's a smart dude, though. He has a mechanical engineering degree, so he could figure it out. Nothing's like super complicated, but he should go in with his eyes wide open, like, hey, I'm going to be an entrepreneur and I want to start a business and I want to run a business and work for myself. I think it's great. I think it would be like a way that he, you know, maybe he has a couple slower years as he's getting started, but then you can make so much more than you thought was possible, especially if he's good at it. Like you said, if he hires a couple people, then he could be making like $250,000-$500,000 a year doing basically the management and running of the company and maybe some high-end stuff. Again, he has an engineering degree. Maybe he could do some cooler projects than some of his peers out there that don't have that sort of education.
Yeah, that's a great point, Doug. I don't know if he has the actual engineering stamp. You know what that is? Like sometimes structural engineers. Yeah. And then that like supersedes like everything. Like the inspectors have to honor that. And if he had that, that would be super valuable. I don't think he does, and I don't think that's his intention, so I don't want to talk about that anymore. But one quick follow-up, he said, I'm guessing just starting back out in construction, I can make 50 to 60. So I think that's him working under this other person. And Doug, I think you said something super important there. And just to rephrase it, if he stays at his current job, and he mentioned more about this in the email, his potential income is pretty much limited to $100,000, which is great, especially in Michigan. You're not living in coastal California, so he could do really great for that. But like you said, if he goes out on his own and does some high-end work, his upside is unlimited, where his upside is capped right now. So I think that's such a crucial point. And we're just talking about money, not to mention the happiness and having autonomy over your life. Like he might be able to work out a situation where he has other people doing most of the work eventually, or he takes winters off and goes to Florida because you don't want to be framing when it's negative 10 in Michigan. So yeah, Frank, I would err on the side of leaving.
Yep. Me too. I think it'd be good to check out the, you know, the construction and the contracting and explore to see if that is a good option. You could do a test for whatever, 3 months, 6 months, a couple years. You'll obviously be earning some money. So even that $155K in post-tax, like hopefully he wouldn't have to touch much of that. He's built a great nest egg. We'd hate for him to like draw down on that in a serious way, especially, I mean, if he's working and he's only spending $60K a year, roughly, he may not need to tap into it much. And maybe he'll earn more as well.
Yeah.
All right. Anything else on that one?
No, that's it.
All right. This one is from our buddy Rich over at Ghostbed. So we have a few questions here, and we will give a little shout out to Ghostbed soon. And shout out to Rich for hanging out with us in Cincinnati. Like we hiked a bunch and he was always around partying. He was a good dude.
Yeah, Rich is a great dude. I talked to him a little bit more at the airport. And just to be clear, like Rich is our sponsor. But he's also a big fan of FI. He was a fan of our podcast and listened to us and submitted these questions. So yeah, Rich is an all-around good dude.
All right. So first question from Rich. What does a typical daily meal and snack look like for us? And if we had to change it up, what would we do to make it more ideal? So, Carl, why don't you kick it off?
Ooh. So, I was staying with David Boyer, who's been on the – we've interviewed David, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. David Boyer's been on the show. We'll link to that in the show notes. But I went to his house, and he just had, like, 7 Tupperware containers filled with broccoli and, like, grilled chicken. He's like, oh, here's what I'm eating for the next week. And actually, I think there were 14 of them. So, he was having that for breakfast and dinner and not – or, I'm sorry, for lunch and dinner and not eating breakfast. So – I like that a lot. I would love to be able to do that, but I can't because I live with 3 other people who would not be happy with that particular diet. But left to my own devices, I do try to eat mostly chicken or fish. Like for lunch, I'll have a can of chicken or some grilled chicken and maybe a couple cans of tuna fish. I think we've both talked about how important protein is, and that's my goal there, to get protein. I also like to eat a lot of vegetables, eat a salad with every meal. A green vegetable like broccoli, maybe some fruit, especially earlier in the day when I need some carbs for energy. And sometimes I'll supplement my protein. I try to get up to a certain number of grams of protein, and sometimes I find I can't do that with my normal diet, so I'll have a protein shake or a protein bar. And the last thing I'll say about all this is my first meal is usually about 11 o'clock. I'll eat a bigger lunch, a small dinner, and then usually go to bed hungry, which I enjoy. I know a lot of people don't like that, but I like going to bed hungry, so I eat a small dinner.
I think we eat close to the same thing. I am curious. You said you eat with 3 other people, obviously your family. You can't eat other stuff than them? Or like, would that just be like if you made the meals like David has and you're like, I'm just eating this?
Yeah, I guess there are 2 issues. Mindy usually does the cooking, and the kids, like one of our kids, a vegetarian, the other one's super picky, so it's very hard to find things we all agree on. If I made the meals, the other 3 people in my household, or maybe my 2 kids, would not eat them. So it's hard to find Venn diagram overlap, and I guess The easy slash hard answer is I could make my own stuff every time, but that gets tedious and I don't know. I'm too lazy for that shit.
Gotcha. And you, I mean, you're doing part of it with the cans of stuff. So that's a hack, I guess. Okay. For me, again, really similar to Carl with one exception, definitely caught some heat for this, but I do eat old fashioned oatmeal almost every day. Helps with your cholesterol, but I put meat in it like a psycho. I've been doing like ground beef in there, like grass-fed ground beef or like ground turkey. And have you tried this yet?
No, I haven't, but I want to. I might stop at Costco. I'm going to walk back from your house today and I got to cut through the Costco parking lot. I might go in there and buy some ground beef. Actually, this sounds good. Is it like plain unseasoned like ground beef or?
No, I mean, I put salt and pepper on there or whatever.
Okay. Yeah. I'm curious to try it. Actually, now I'm going to take heat too, but it actually sounds kind of good to me.
And here's the thing, like people imagine whatever, like cinnamon and raisin and then put meat in there. But I think of it as like a starchy base, like rice or potatoes. And you would eat meat with rice and that's normal. So it's just a different way to look at it. And I'll put sometimes some hot sauce on there. I'll put some cheese occasionally. So, yeah, it's just like a savory, meaty thing. And I can get like 50 or 60 grams of protein in the morning first thing, which is fucking bananas, right?
Wow. So how?
About how many, half a pound.
Half a pound of meat is 50 to 60 grams.
Well, so I do some other stuff too. So it'll be pretty close. It might be like 40 something, mid-40s. People can check the math and you'll, you know, do about half a pound or so. I'll often make it with like bone broth. So that's like another 9 grams. And here's the other part. I'll throw in some powdered peanut butter. You use that stuff? You ever see it?
I have not.
So it's powdered peanut butter and it doesn't really impart much of a flavor when you put it in oatmeal and meat and throw some like garlic, salt and pepper in there. People are probably yelling at me in their car here. It tastes good, trust me. So I put a couple tablespoons of the peanut butter powder, and it's another like 9-13 grams of protein or something like that. So like all these little pieces like add up, and yeah, it's a huge amount of protein. And like I told you, like if you're eating whole foods instead of like a protein shake or a bar, it is so filling. I feel awesome.
Interesting.
I sound horrible, but I feel awesome.
If the podcast doesn't work out, we can start a meat oatmeal food truck. Pick out your toppings, like Chipotle. You'll point at what toppings you want, and we'll just hang out outside the CrossFit with our food cart.
All right. So continuing on, generally, like I said, about the same. Chicken. I like chicken thighs. I mean, I eat chicken breasts too, but I've been getting more thighs just for like more flavor and a little more fat in there. I'll eat beef, red meat, fish, pork, usually with veggies and starch most of the time. So we're talking like potatoes or sweet potatoes, rice, occasionally pasta. Elizabeth loves pasta. I try to stay away from it because it, you know, thunder thighs, right? It just goes right to my legs. We'll eat tortillas quite a bit. I eat a lot of berries. So I just got like raspberries and blueberries and blackberries. So we usually have some of those around. Bananas. I've been eating a lot more apples lately, like one every other day, something like that, which has been good. Do you eat a lot of fruit?
No.
Okay. Any specific reason? Or?
Just the lots of carbs. I'd like to get myself to a better body composition. Blood pressure is still a little high, so I've been trying to avoid those sugar. But like I said, I do try to have maybe a piece of fruit first thing in the morning to get the energy levels up a little bit.
Gotcha. I used to say that too. Look at the nutrition data for like an apple, and you have to eat like a fuckload of apples for it to, I think it's like 90 calories. Like it's not that much.
Okay.
Like there's some carbs in there, but it's not like what we think. Cause I used to be like, oh, I want to stay away from fruit. I don't want those sugary carbs, but it's like you could eat a lot of blueberries and berries and it's really not that much. And it's like, it's much better than me eating nuts. Nuts have a huge amount of calories, right? Yeah. So I used to eat, I would go and just grab like handfuls of nuts and eat probably like, I would say 400, 800 calories a day and just fucking nuts because I'm like, oh, these are healthy, right? And I'm 90% certain the berries and other fruit are probably better for me.
Okay.
So I don't know. Look it up. You know your body. But I was like, oh yeah, like these fruits have so many carbs, but it's really not that much. Like we do much more damage like with other bad decisions. So
got it.
And I love berries. Occasionally I have a protein bar or shake. Generally it's high protein. All that said, that's ideal. That happens most of the time in our normal routine. I was just on vacation. We ate at Wendy's like, I don't know, 15 times or something like that. We brought some food in the car, but eventually we ran out. Wendy's, they have these great Cinnabon pull apart things. I love desserts. We went to a chocolate shop and I was just like, I almost never just like say, hey, I'm going to eat some of this garbage. So I was like, I want that, and ate probably like 1,000 calories of just like chocolate. We also went to this great Amish pretzel bar. And it was fucking amazing, dude. So it was this, you know, these nice Amish folks made these pretzels. I got the cinnamon sugar one. They dip it in butter.
Oh my God.
Like they just submerge it in butter for like, I don't know, 20 seconds. They pull it out, put sugar and cinnamon all over it. It was so good, man. So good. So I ate horrible. I probably put on like 3 or 4 pounds in the last week.
Man, did you really go to Wendy's 15 times or?
No, it was probably like 5. We went more than once and I would get like Dave's double classic or whatever.
Yeah.
Big juicy burger. So that's not ideal. I usually don't let myself go like that many consecutive days for consecutive meals. Usually it's just like one or two here or there.
It's hard on vacation. Like I don't want to go into a restaurant, sit down and order like a salad. That just seems weird. Like I could do this at home for like 1/10 the price. Perhaps that's the wrong way to look at it. But yeah, on vacation this time, I was at Russian River Brewing and I had a cheeseburger for lunch. And then I'm on my way out, I'm like, you know what? In-N-Out burger. So then I had another burger for dinner on my way out. So
yeah, it is tough. It is tough. And yeah, I need to get back on track. I need to get healthy, start eating right. I'll probably start counting my calories again. I think we got less than 90 days till summer. When we got to have our beach body.
Yeah.
And, you know, we're going to Camp Fi in July. I think it's sold out, right? So people would only get in there if they have like a cancellation. But yeah, I mean, we got to be ready to take our shirts off, like all Camp Fis, right?
Oh, absolutely. I think there's a hot tub and a pool there. And we're going to be spending most of our time poolside, barely clothed. I mean, enough clothing so it's appropriate, but no more than that.
Just kidding, Stephen. We're not going to do that. We're not doing any of that. But we're going to look. I saw some of those mesh. It wasn't a tank top, but it was like a mesh see-through, like sleeveless. I think that's pretty cool.
Though. Okay. And I was at Costco and they have their bathing suits now, you know, like retail, especially clothes, they go early and they have a line of Speedos at Costco. So I was picturing us in them and specifically you. So I think... I know your birthday is coming up pretty soon, or maybe, no, it already happened. It's right around now. So
it's coming up.
Yeah. It'll be a birthday present. Do you have a preference, like a tangerine Speedo? That's a song, by the way, or blue, black, white. I don't know.
Well, I don't know. Yeah. I'll have to think about that.
I think I'm going to go with the, they had this, I'm surprised Costco had this, like congratulations to their buyers, but they had a leopard print one, which is pretty, pretty hot.
I like that.
Yeah. Okay. I'll go for that one then. Or you'll go for that one because I'll purchase it for your birthday.
Before we keep going with Rich's questions, let's do our ad read for Ghost Bed. So you got a bed recently. You have said that you've laid on it a little bit and you did a little unboxing. Can you tell us anything else about the bed?
Yeah, it feels great. We have not had a chance to sleep in it yet because I've been out of town, but we're going to do that very soon. And the other thing is we have a bunch of people coming to Longmont soon, so I'm going to have all of them sleep in it. This is going to be our guest bed. I think the first one might be BJ. He's going to be here in a couple of weeks. Remember him from Economy?
Oh, yeah. He's coming through.
Yeah.
Cool. We got to have him. Can he record with us?
Yeah. That'd be super cool. Awesome. Talk about his Lamborghini. I can live my childhood wet dream through BJ. That did not sound good at all. But yeah, BJ will be here, and he might be the first guest to sleep on the ghost bed. So I'm curious to see what BJ thinks about it.
Very cool. All right. So you are going to sleep on it, though, eventually.
I am. I will do it before BJ. I want to break it in myself.
All right. Cool. Well, you and Mindy do that. And we'll give a little shout out here. So Ghostbed is a family-owned business with 20-plus years of experience, over 60,000 five-star reviews, patented sleep and cooling technology. That's one of the things where I was like, you know what? I do want to work with Ghostbed. They have the cooling technology.
Yep. Yeah, super important to me also. And they're made in the USA with premium materials. I know there's been some issues with mattresses being made in other countries that have had, like, I forget what kind of substance in them. It wasn't good. It's not something you want to be in contact with, but ghost beds are made here. So high quality. You don't have to worry about that stuff. And Doug, you talked about Mindy and I sleeping over. We could have that sleepover too, Doug. I'm just saying.
Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah.
I'll wait till I get healthy again and then we'll check it out. But I do remember, I saw that story about that other mattress. I think it was filled with taco meat. Was that the same story?
I don't think so, but that sounds kind of good. I would pay extra for that.
Yeah.
Taco meat.
It smell good. It's like one of those little spritzers, you know, helps you sleep. Yeah. Taco meat, nacho cheese.
I like that a lot.
You can go to ghostbed.com/milehighfi with code milehighfi to save 50% site-wide. So thanks a lot to Ghostbed.
Yeah. Thank you, Rich. Okay. Let's get into Rich's second question. So this one is pretty interesting. I know I have a lot more to say about this, but I couldn't, like, my life has pretty much been informed by the experiences I've had in the FI community. So back to Rich's question. He said, what are a couple key takeaways that you have learned by chatting with other fire folks that you are trying to instill in your life? And he said, we're not allowed to talk about die with zero. So we can't talk about that. So anything else we've learned?
Yeah, this was a little tough for me. I think a lot of the things that I've learned, I've internalized a little bit, or I have over the past 8 to 10 years. Part of the reason is I went the entrepreneurship route after I got laid off. So I slowly started integrating some of the ideas from FI, maybe not intentionally, but I had a hard time identifying things that I learned and instilled because I feel like I've just been doing it for so long, if that makes sense. Does that make sense?
It does make sense.
And you're probably the same way because you've been in the community for so long, like you said. So a couple broad topics, though, just doing less. So I did come in the entrepreneurship route, and a lot of the, like, bloggers and podcasters that I followed, they were all about growth and earning as much money as possible, as fast as possible, with, you know, no reason. So I had friends who were like, I want to make 100K a month. And then, like, why? And they're like, oh, because this other person does, which is a very stupid reason to have a goal like that. I didn't tell them that, but I was just like, okay, that's interesting. But I decided to do less. So instead of, like, growing at all costs, I was like, you know what? I'm in a good spot right now. I'm going to keep doing less. And I keep doing less to this day, which I'll come back to. The other thing that I've learned, there are many different paths. So some people do the real estate thing, and that's great. It's not my style. Some people are very, you know, aggressive as far as savings and frugality and stuff. And that's great. That's not my style either. And there's just a huge wide spectrum of, like, what people want, whether they want to actually retire or just have an optional job or not have an optional job or however they want to do it. And I think most of the folks that we hang out with now that have been in the FI community for a long time, they're not really dogmatic, even though their blogs or content might suggest that they are, you know, dogmatic about everything. They're not. They're usually extremely flexible. And I think, what did I note here? I was like, the people that are dogmatic don't get it. I think they're, like, too aggressive and they just turn people off. And I think, you know, we were in Tempe hanging out with a bunch of FI folks, and everyone is super flexible. They're like, oh yeah, if that makes you happy, like, do that thing. Like, no one is trying to, you know, put their outlook on top of somebody else or like force people to do things. And I think that's great. The thing that I'm still trying to do is not work. So I don't plan on, you know, quote, retiring. I think we'll keep doing the podcast, Carl. Newsflash, we're going to keep doing the podcast. But with Elizabeth not working now for about 2 weeks or so, like the amount of work, which is not a huge amount, but the amount of work that I'm doing is more than I want to do. So I need to like look at the shit that I'm working on and maybe like just quit some stuff that I don't need to do where I can just have more free time instead. So that's one thing that I've learned. And, you know, I see like people are trying to do less and I need to do less and actually like not work, or at least only do like the very best little pieces that I want to do and just get rid of the other shit.
Yeah. There's a lot there. How do you decide what you're going to do less of? Like, are there obvious things in your life that you want to cut out at this point?
Yep. So the other side of my business, I had online courses. So I sunset some of the courses and they were all related to like building niche sites or content sites out there, blogs essentially. And I sunset those. The industry is actually like shifting and changing and it may not even be relevant. So that's an easy part for me just to say, I'm not going to do any of this stuff. So there are some clear pieces where I'm like, I'm doing a decent amount of work. I don't know if I'm interested in it. I could earn some money, but it doesn't really matter. And it might be easier for me just to like shut this down. On the other side, I did start the podcast bootcamp, which we've had, by the time this goes live, three of the three people should have launched their show. So two people have already. So Mark from Mark's Money Mind. So his show's out there doing great. I think he has more reviews than us now, which is crazy. And then other guy, Jason. So he's launched his show. He'll be, I'll link up to it. And then the other one is Amberly. So she'll have a show out too, which we'll link up to as well. So anyway, there's a thing that I could teach and help people. And that could be a better area for me to work on than like the old niche site stuff. So there's some clear pieces where I could just like stop doing it, sell a couple things off if anyone's interested and just move on. Yeah.
Yeah. Super cool. Okay. Mine. Again, we were down in Tempe with a bunch of people, and one of the people I talked to was Brad Baird, and Brad looked super good physically, so I asked him what he was doing for his workout routine, and he gave me a bunch of detailed answers, and I think we should save most of them for another show. We'll have another fitness follow-up soon, but I have pivoted and changed my workout routine. I've been doing this for about the past month, and I feel super good about it. I actually spend maybe a little bit less time at the gym. I'm there less days, but I think I get more done and I have a more effective workout. So I'm thankful for that. The next one I have is from Pete. Pete, Mr. Money Mustache, used to drive me a little bit crazy because the man does not make plans. If you ask him to do something a week from now, he'll just outwardly, most of the time, say no. I'm like, wow, how do I deal with a person like this? And some of that came from me because I'm the opposite. I'm always making plans and I've got my life all planned out. And I finally came around to seeing it from his way. Like once you make a plan, you've put a stake in the ground, like I have to do this thing on this day. And it could be a little bit of anxiety inducing because now yourself is in the future. You can't do anything else with the time because you've already committed to do something at that. And you can't live as, I don't think spontaneous sounds too cliche, but not as like carefree. You can't just be, as I heard Jordan from the Earn and Invest podcast once say. So I really try to err on the side of Pete with the no planning thing. So if someone asks me to do something a week from now, my response will be like, hey, how about you ping me the day before if you're still free and you want to do this thing, and I'll see what my day looks like at that point, and then we can go from there. And there's another lesson in this, I guess. Like, there's so many things. I guess I'm fortunate for this that we have a lot of friends and there's a lot going on, but if I said yes to everything, I'd need like three times as many hours in the day to get it all done to have time for it. So the default should be no, and go from there. So that's a big one. The third one I have is, I was talking to JL recently, and this is something I always thought, like, oh, once I get to Phi, I'll be happy and money will be great. Everything will be so much better. And JL's like, no, that was not the right way to think about this. If you have money, that will solve money problems. And that's it. It's not going to solve anything else. Perhaps you can use that money to solve some other problems, but just money, the fact that you have it, isn't going to make you happy. And for some reason, I thought it did, and that was pretty silly to think. So those are my three. The workout routine, do less and don't plan, and realizing that money is not going to solve anything else except money issues.
How long did it take you to figure out the money will solve money problems?
I don't know. So as you know, Doug, I just got back from the Hoffman process thing. And so I used money to solve a problem there. But I don't know. I think it's evolved over the past 7 years, and maybe I'm still not completely there yet. And we sound kind of like privileged assholes saying this, or at least I do. Like, it's great. I'm so thankful that the money's there. You've got a lot less stress in life, and it eliminates a lot of the negatives, but it might not create the positives that you think it would. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I'm still evolving.
Yeah. I think people understand. We are pretty entitled, I guess.
Totally. We have one more from Rich. This is, if you had a second home, what city or state would it be in and why?
So I was like, I don't know about this one. And then I started thinking about it, and I came up with several. And I'd probably add to the list. So number one on the list, Paradise Valley. That's in Livingston, Montana. And that's sort of the gateway. It's off a 90, Interstate 90, heading down to Yellowstone. Have you been down that highway?
Been
down that area?
I may have. We drove to Yellowstone, but I don't know if I passed through there. It was a long time ago.
Okay. Yeah, it's awesome. A lot of celebrities like live in Paradise Valley, but yeah, it's sort of the gateway heading down to, I believe, the north entrance of Yellowstone. So cool area. And I like, you know, the mountains and the animals, and, you know, the Yellowstone River flows right through there. There's always eagles out, and just awesome.
Nice.
The other I listed was Kona over on the Big Island. So we went on vacation there. It's almost 15 years ago now, but really enjoyed it. I'm not a big beach person, not a big ocean person, but really enjoyed the whole vibe and the culture and the food. And being half Filipino, I felt like really fit in there well. And we were only there for like a little over a week. So I probably need to go back and check it out again, but really enjoyed that. And then the last one I'll mention is Mission Beach, San Diego. San Diego is just awesome. And we vacationed there a couple years ago, and we could walk to so many different places. Again, not really an ocean person, but if I'm getting a second or third or fourth home and I just want to pop over, like, those would all be awesome.
Yeah. Mission Beach is such a cool area. I love it too. Good food. There's beer around there. You can watch the sunset. They've got the, I don't know what they call it, the strand, maybe the just walking pathway up and down the beach.
Yeah.
So good. Piers. Oh, I love it there as well.
What about you?
Okay. So my vacation home would be in Colorado, and we were actually looking at some stuff a couple of weeks ago, but I think I need to relabel it. It won't be so much of a vacation home as a partial retirement home. And that doesn't sound good either. That sounds like an old folks home. But after our kids are out, Mindy and I will probably spend maybe a third to half our time in a mountain town. And that's because we enjoy the outdoor recreation. Like this particular town we were looking at has great mountain biking, great hiking in the summer. And the thing about it is it's right there in town. You don't even have to walk anywhere. So you could just jump on your bike or walk to the trailhead and be there doing it. And there's also a ski mountain nearby, like not super close mountain access. You have to drive to it. So we could be up there in the winter enjoying it. And the reason I say Colorado is I want it close. I want to be able to go to it spontaneously. Like, hey, it's going to be 100. Let's go up there for the next 4 days and escape the heat, or they're going to be having this festival, or someone else wants to stay at our primary house. So I want it to be easily reachable. And I know people have bought vacation homes and then they never end up going there, or they're there for like a week, a year. So it doesn't make sense. I want this to be something that's easily accessible. And the other reason too, I want it to be here. I want to share with people like, hey, Doug, we're going up. You want to come hang out with us? And we can all just jump in the car and be there, or you can come up while we're there, or maybe even use it when we're not. So I want to be able to share this thing with friends.
It's funny. Elizabeth is pushing this more than me, but like the house that we're in is like it's too big for us, right? So she's thinking further out. And yeah, we like the mountain town vibe, especially a small town. And it makes a lot of sense. So maybe we could share it, or at least we could use yours. We'll do like a timeshare. We'll set up our own timeshare.
Yeah. And the cool thing is a lot of these towns, the prices have gone crazy. So they allow you to build an ADU. So our tentative plan is to buy something with an ADU or build one out there. So like maybe a little 2-bed, 1-bath ADU. So people don't have to be on top of each other.
Very cool. All right. We have one from Patty here. I'll let you read this one, Carl.
Okay. So this one is about home construction. Patty says, he's heard about many of my projects, and the one thing you've done is rebuilt an Allen block retaining wall. I didn't know they were called Allen blocks. I'm not sure what that is, but I used like 60-pound concrete preformed blocks. He said, would you do this again or hire it out? I have a 4-foot by 85-foot wall leaning pretty bad. I'm debating on doing it or hiring it out. If so, do you have any tips? Yeah, this is an interesting question. My wall is almost those exact same specs. I think mine was probably 3 by 85, but because some of the blocks are underground to form the foundation, it is close to 4 feet actually. The thing I would say to Patty is this is a lot of work. So if you like manual physical labor, like carrying 60-pound blocks around, which I do enjoy, I don't have to go to the gym. I can just do that. And I actually have something to show for it. I think it's great, but it is a lot of work. And he said, do we have any tips? Do I have any tips? The hardest part of this whole thing, and the main thing, is just getting the thing level. Like the first row has to be have a super solid foundation and be super level. But then after that, it's just like Lego. You're just piling bricks on top of each other, which is quite fun. He said, do you have any? Oh, and the one other tip I'd say is he said the existing wall he had is leaning. What you're supposed to do with a retaining wall is backfill it with rocks, and that's really important for drainage. That might be why his current one is leaning over. So he might have to do a little bit of excavation to dig dirt out and replace it with rocks. And I put like landscape fabric over the rocks too, so dirt can't eventually get in there and fill it. You want it to drain really well when it rains so it doesn't exert any pressure on the wall. So those are the two main tips. Get the first level, super level, and you do that with string and little string levels, I think they're called, and lots of stakes. That'll take you a long time. Put sand in there, tamp it down, and then just make sure you backfill it with lots of rocks. But I don't know, should you do it yourself? I might get a, if you're on the fence about it, if you're on the retaining wall fence about it, see what I did there, Doug? I might get a quote and see what they want versus how much it would do to build yourself. And if you do hire someone out, I would specifically ask them to see like the last three jobs they did, because I've seen some professionally done that aren't as good as the one I did. And I'm just an amateur. I'm sure it took me a lot longer of a time, but mine is perfect. Even after a year in a super, super heavy rain season, one of the most we've ever had, like the thing is perfectly fine. It looks just like I did when I built it. So make sure if you hire someone out, they're going to do a good job. And I would ask questions like, what are they going to do for the foundation to get the first row straight? Stuff like that. So yeah, good luck with that. It'll be a good workout. I think mine ended up having 213 blocks. So it was kind of fun.
How long did it take you?
Oh man, I didn't work on it full time, but probably, and I did hire someone to help me move some of the rocks to backfill it. It was probably maybe 60 hours of labor between me and the other person. Okay. So it's not insignificant.
It's a lot of work.
Yeah.
And okay, our last one here.
Yeah.
This is from John. John says, who wins in a foot race, Doug or Carl? What do you think?
I don't know. Maybe we just have to go out to the street. See, it depends how long of a race it is. Is it a sprint? Is it like 100 meter, or is it like a half marathon? I know you've got some issues. So a long distance, although I'd be extremely slow, I could probably do, because you might have Achilles problems or something like that.
Yeah. Carl wins. I don't run anymore. So yeah, okay. I used to run. I think back when I ran, I probably could outrun you.
Okay.
But yeah, I need to pick the cardio back up. I kind of dropped off as I've been lifting weights a little bit more. Yeah, I think you've done like a handful of 5Ks in the last year or so. And yeah, you're respectable. Get out there and run.
I almost was on the podium stand for the last 5K for July 4th.
Oh, yeah? That's cool.
There's a caveat to it though. In my age group, there was like, I think the top three like won something, and there was like five people in my group, and I was four.
So close.
So I was like 30 seconds away in it. My time was horrible. I hadn't trained them. Just like, I'm going to go out there and do it. So I think it was like 34 minutes, and I've done one in under 30 minutes. So if I was in my old form, I could have had a little plastic trophy on my wall.
And you've done some half marathons, right?
I've done one. It was one of the worst days of my life. I don't think I'll ever do it again. It was terrible, Doug. Don't ever do that. Well, you've done like a, have you done a whole marathon or?
No, just halves.
Oh man. Did you enjoy it or?
Yeah, I loved it. Ugh. Yeah, it was great. I love like the distance of, you know, I don't know, however long it takes me to run like a little over an hour and a half. So like 10 miles or something like that. But longer runs are fun, but yeah, the Achilles stuff. And then, I mean, running is just hard on your body. Great workout, but it just beats the shit out of you. Like it's always just injury management. So yeah, I don't run anymore. Do you do much cardio these days? What are you doing?
I guess it depends what you define by cardio. I try to keep my heart rate up to like 120 or 130. So when I go on walks, I'll wear a weight vest, or when I'm at the gym, I'll crank the speed up to between 4 and 4.5 and then crank the incline up. I'm going to do the Manitou incline in a couple months when we go to Camp Fi. Oh, okay. So I've been doing that little escalator deal. I don't know what you call that thing, Stairmaster thing at the gym. So I've been doing that. That gets the heart rate up. But no, I tend to try to keep my heart rate up to like 130, which I guess more is fat burning zone, and not go into the super high stuff. Maybe I do the super high stuff like twice a week on that stairmill thing.
Oh yeah. Yeah, that thing's great. I like that. I've worn like my backpack with some weight in there going up that.
Yeah. Which is good. I saw you doing that once at the gym. I was quite impressed. And you had, it wasn't the leopard Speedo because you haven't had that, but it was a surprising fashion choice. They were probably like sport shorts or something like that. But yeah.
Yeah. I don't
know. You do you, Doug.
Yeah. They're short. Yeah.
Very short.
All right. Anything else?
I think that's it. Yeah. Let's do a fitness episode coming up. I'm eager to talk about my new goals, and I've got a continuous glucose monitor on right now, which I just slapped on my arm this morning, a big needle into your arm. Kind of unpleasant.
Ooh. Yeah. Did it hurt pretty bad?
It did a little bit. I thought it was, I talked to a friend. They're like, oh yeah, it's a small thing. It doesn't hurt. And then I looked at the thing. It's at least, I don't know, maybe quarter of an inch long that just shoots into your arm. It's got this little spring thing. You press a button, poof, it's like, wah. It wasn't that bad.
How long do you wear it?
14 days.
All right. Cool. Yeah, we'll record something about that. And I'll try to get healthy and stop coughing. This is horrible.
Yeah, please do that.
Thanks for listening to the show. That was the Mile High Five podcast, and I'm Doug Cunnington, the Balder host, and Carl Jensen is the cool, sexy one. If you dig the show, please do three things for us. Number one, tell a friend, a family member, an enemy about the show. We really don't care who you tell. Maybe forward them a specific show that you know that they will like. It's the single most helpful thing that you can do to spread the word. It's like giving us a virtual high five, and actually we don't give high fives in person, so the virtual kind's pretty good. And more importantly, your friend or family member or even your enemy will appreciate the fact that you were thinking of them. Number two, make sure you're following or subscribed on your podcast app, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Overcast, YouTube, whatever you're using, and that way you won't miss a show. And number three, please leave us a rating and review. We read them on the show occasionally, and you might hear yours out there on an upcoming episode. Quick disclaimer. This show is not financial or legal advice. I'd actually be surprised if it sounded like it. It's really just for entertainment, and that's at least what we're hoping for. But seriously, get advice from professionals. Carl and I are just two guys with microphones that sit in my basement and talk. So we'll catch y'all next week.
So, Doug, how's it going?
I'm pretty good. Doing well today. How about you?
Good. I just got back from my Hoffman process, which we'll talk about in a future episode, but I had an embarrassing experience there. There are some, I guess I would call them meditation style exercises, where you sit there and you do a visualization where one of the teachers is leading you through this thing. So anyway, Doug, at one point, we're all sitting on the floor around the circle. We're supposed to be envisioning this campfire in the middle of the circle. And I feel my stomach start to rumble. I'm like, oh my God, I have to fart. I got to suppress this. But then after a minute, I realized resistance was futile. And they really discouraged you from getting up. They didn't want you to be disruptive to the rest of the people. So I'm like, I got to just let this go. But I'm pretty confident that I can do it quietly. So I gear myself up, and it did not come out quietly. So it's a silent visualization. This teacher's talking calmly and softly and wah, in the middle of the thing.
Oh, man. Did you open your eyes after that?
I did not. I did not want to see who else had opened their eyes. I tried to keep my nose shut as well.
That's pretty good. Have you done that sort of thing before?
Maybe just with Headspace, like similar meditation practices with that, where someone is talking to you, not quite to this level.
I meant like farting in public like that, where like you were not supposed to.
Yeah, I'm trying to think. I usually do try to fart in first class on planes, but that's a very intentional thing. Like, you know, when you're walking through the cabin and all the first class people are on there already. Yeah, so yeah. Sometimes I'll try to unleash one there. Sorry, first class people. I'm just jealous of you. The problem is me, not you, first class people. Hopefully one day I'll join you in first class. But yeah, I'm trying to think. I remember one time in school we were taking a test and I let one rip during that. But yeah, not many. Usually I'm in control of my backside.
And yeah, that's a pretty good story. Especially it's like so quiet. I didn't have a fart queued up for this instant that I'm going to tell you. But we were visiting some national parks and we were in a cave. We're in Mammoth Cave. They turn off the lights so you could experience the cave and its natural habitat, its glory. So they turn off the lights and there's probably like 50 people in this giant dome room. And it's so quiet too. It's like completely quiet. And I was like, man, it would be great if I could fart right now. Cause it would just reverberate and it would just be natural. But I didn't have one queued up, unfortunately.
Oh man, I guess we'll just have to go back there. Maybe we can do a cave experience together. I'm sure there's a cave somewhere in Colorado and we can go to like Taco Bell the night before or that morning for lunch or breakfast and hit the cave in the afternoon. And
yeah. Well, that's pretty awesome. And then did anyone know that you did it later on?
I admitted to it. I was sitting around a table and I was like, it was loud, but did anyone else really notice it? Was it as loud as I thought? Because of course you're your own worst critic. So the lie I told myself was, maybe no one knew about it. So I was talking to some of the other people at lunch. I'm like, hey, a couple days ago when we were doing that campfire meditation thing, I farted. Did anyone notice? And this one person's like, oh my God, I thought someone farted. I'm like, oh shit. So, and I don't think she was sitting near me either.
Yeah.
So yeah, it turns out that everyone heard it.